Fanning. Weekends on 2FM.
Next Wednesday sees the end of 4 years of President Donald Trump. Certainly not the end of Donald Trump, but the end of President Donald Trump, when Joe Biden is going to be sworn in as the 46th US president. It's an understatement to say an awful lot has happened in the US since we last talked to my next guest, Marion McKeown, US correspondent with the Business Post. And she's here now again to take us through the last few weeks and what we should expect in the run-up to the inauguration and beyond. Not that she has a crystal ball, but Marion, how are you doing? Are you all right?
I was just laughing there, Dave. I'm very good saying that if anyone knows what's going to happen in the next week, yeah, they're a far smarter person than I am, because
please tell us,
we really, from day to day, we just don't know what's going to unfold next.
Yeah, indeed. Well, listen, look, hold on a second there. The first US president in history to be impeached twice. That's all going on as we speak. Tell us about the road that led us here. Above all, probably, tell us about what could happen in the next few days with this impeachment.
Okay. Well, most immediately, not much is going to happen in the next few days with this impeachment. Yeah. Nancy Pelosi hasn't referred the articles of impeachment to the Senate yet, which means that a trial can't start in any case because she hasn't sent over the articles. Now, Mitch McConnell made it very clear that he wasn't going to start any kind of a trial on, I think it's at the moment, he wasn't going to call back the Senate for an emergency hearing. The Senate starts up again on the 19th, which is on Tuesday. Obviously, it's not going to start that day. It's not going to start inauguration day. And there's a lot of debate at the moment amongst Democrats about how to proceed, because understandably, they want to hit the ground running with Joe Biden's agenda. They complain, and very rightly, in my view, that Donald Trump has had all the oxygen all the time for the last 5-6 years, and that they're determined he is not going to eclipse the start of Joe Biden's presidency. Joe Biden has huge things to do in the first 100 days of office, in the first week of office, and the Senate needs to be available and willing to help him with that. They have the slimmest of majorities now. They need to move quickly. So there have been talks about... I spoke with a spokesperson for Christine Gillibrand, the New York senator, who's close to Chuck Schumer, and they were looking at doing things like having a one day of a Senate trial and the second day of normal Senate business and confirmations, or cutting them in half or doing one and just the other. It seems now that they might just forge ahead for the first couple of weeks with taking care of business, as in the business of governance and Joe Biden's administration, and then carry on the trial at some point after that. Now, they lose the risk of losing steam, of the public outrage dimming, of people saying, oh, for God's sake, he's gone, just let him go. Why are we starting this up again? Yeah. And they also lose the chance of Republicans, who in the heat of the moment might say, you know what, I'm going to vote this time to convict him, that they'll just go, oh, you know what, forget it. There's a race coming up in 2022. So it's kind of fraught either way. And nobody's really clear as of now what's happening. And I don't think the dust will settle until late next week.
OK, I mean, like years ago, Jimmy Carter, what do you call it? He exonerated, if that's the right word for it, Richard Nixon. And this could happen again in some ways, in that, oh, listen, what the hell? And a lot of Republicans want that to happen. But accountability is vital. You've got to learn from history in so many ways. And like whatever has happened last week in America, I mean, last April, he was encouraging sedition right across the board. He, in a big, huge print in his thing, says, liberate Michigan. And he tweeted this whole thing to get rifle-toting MAGA troops to shut down the state legislature in Michigan itself. And it worked. He did. Over COVID restrictions. And like, last week was just the next step. And then in the middle, he had the speeches, or he had the, what do you call it, the presidential debate. And in the middle of that, he told them to stand by.
Yeah. You know, Dave, I'm really glad, because that to me is a really important point. You asked earlier where the road to the second impeachment started. In my view, it started in 2015 when he came down that escalator and he said Mexicans are rapists and criminals, because from that point, he was encouraging white supremacists. He was emboldening, you know, that's the neo-Nazi movements that were seething after two terms of Barack Obama. He knew that, and he knew that was the way to get them based up, riled up, and to get them out to vote. Because traditionally, these white militias, they don't bother voting. They stockpile bullets and guns up the mountains in Idaho, where have you, and they're not really big voters. So he knew that to get them on board, he had to do this. Now, I think you mentioned there about Richard Nixon's pardon, which was by Gerald Ford.
Did I say Jimmy Carter? Sorry,
he did, but that's okay. Yeah. But, you know, and I think that you make another really good point there, because is there no penalty for presidents who commit crimes while in office? Is there no penalty? Is it just, well, he's the president, we can't send him to jail, we can't, you know, subject him to a criminal trial? What incentive is there then for potentially wayward presidents to modify their behaviour? The law, they should not be above the law, and we're told that repeatedly, that presidents aren't above the law. when in fact, to all intents and purposes, the evidence suggests very much that they are in the way that they are treated.
Not only that, he's just let off the three guys in jail who were like completely on his side and who should and deserve to go to jail, and he let them all out. And he might be able to do it for himself. We don't know about that one just yet, although people say he can't.
The latest gossip swirling around is that he could resign at the last minute, and that he doesn't believe there is talk about that at the moment. That if he resigns, even for a couple of hours, that Mike Pence will then pardon him and he'll just go off and the Republicans can wash their hands of him and the problem is solved. But I don't know if that's going to happen. Apparently, he doesn't believe that Mike Pence will pardon him. But also, a lot of Republicans want to be shut of him. The only way they're going to be shut of him permanently, because if he runs again in 2024, he'll be the same age as Joe Biden is now. And I can tell you this, Dave, from being on the campaign trails around him and being at various events he does, his energy levels are phenomenal. He is a much more energetic, whatever is driving him, whatever fuel is motivating him. It's hamburgers and Kentucky Fried Chicken. Yeah. I'll tell you what. So given the grievance that he's leaving behind, if he ran again in 2024, I think Republicans are really worried that he would win the nomination hands down, it would be the sequel. You know, Donald.
Okay, well then, hold on. Let's take it down to one person. I mean, I could go 2 hours or an hour before the attack in the Capitol last week. I was watching it on the television. Ted Cruz doing his bit, and it was absolutely frightening to think that you can actually say these kind of things and get away with it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the point I was trying to, you could see what he was trying to do, which is, Trump is on the way out, but he's got 74 million people who voted for him. I'm going to take those 74 million. They're going to be mine in future. I don't give a damn if I believe in anything I'm saying or not, and frankly, I think he does. I'm going to get those 74 million. So on that note, it's the other guy over to his left-hand side, and you've mentioned his name. I cannot understand just the tolerance for this guy. Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell is the number one enabler of President Trump. And he's saying now he doesn't know which way. Is he allowed to say, I don't know which way I'm going to vote? Seriously, what are you telling us here?
The outrage in your voice. Dave.
No, but it's absolutely why do they tolerate people like this anymore? I just don't get it.
Because he's in
charge of the Senate for another 72 hours.
But let me put Mitch McConnell in context for you. Mitch McConnell represents an obsession of the Republicans and his own legacy. And he did not care if the country went to hell in a handcart in the process. His main aim as Senate Majority Leader was to stack the courts with as many far-right conservative pro-life judges as he could. That was his aim.
Yeah, and it's not just the Supreme Court. You're talking about all the courts. We're talking 240 different ones.
Exactly.
And all of them, by the way, loads of them are between the ages of 30 and 40. They're going to be there for donkey's years.
Exactly. And you know what? Loads of them are astonishingly ill-qualified, but they have passed the litmus test of being far-right and pro-life. And that way he believes he will keep the evangelical base within the Republican Party. And that way he believes this will be my legacy, that, you know, that for a generation, the courts will find in the Republican Party's favour much more than they would otherwise, because these people are such political animals. The appointees are not judges, they're politicians. And that's what he saw his job. And he thought all this turmoil, you know, it's going to be somebody else's problem. What Mitch McConnell is doing now is he and Trump entirely despise each other and they entirely used each other.
Yeah,
Trump used McConnell and McConnell used Trump. And now Trump is no longer of any use to Mitch McConnell. He's lost the Senate. He's lost the House
House. The exact same story as a guy I haven't heard of over the last 2 weeks, but we certainly heard a lot of him over the last 2 years, and that's William Barr. William Barr isn't around any. I don't know what he's up to at the moment, because he hated Trump. Trump hated him, and the two of them really worked well together because they both got exactly what they wanted from each other. And just to go on there with the Christian Nation that they're all on about, this guy's the most right-wing conservative sort of person I've ever come across. The Christian Nation in a kind of an ISIS way is what he wants in America. Okay, so he didn't get the next 4 years. He wasn't able to put it into sort of in train, if you like, and he's not going to get that. But like, I mean, guys like him as well, where's he now? Is he just shutting up saying, well, I've always hated Trump, so I don't have to do anything now?
Well, I think Bill Barr feels that his mission was accomplished as well. His mission was to ensure, he very strongly believes that the president should be more powerful than the Congress. And he certainly helped to achieve that with the way he handled the Mueller report, with the impeachment, with so many things, with the way that he opened investigations into Donald Trump's enemies. And we're not just talking big enemies. We're talking people like Melania Trump's former best friend, Winston Woolcock. You know, she was investigating investigated by the Department of Justice because she wrote a book about Melania that Melania didn't like. They said
yeah, but don't forget that 1,250 people from the Department of Justice called for investigation into Barr himself, you know. And He was able to just brush it off. And I remember he was the one who organised the Battle of Lafayette Square. And in terms of like what was done there to a peaceful protest, where were they last Wednesday?
Well, as we've said, Trump is no longer useful now. There's no purpose anymore to be served in sticking with Trump. He has filled his use for them. He has enabled them to overreach in ways that they could never have done with a responsible conventional Republican president. They could never have even done this with a George Bush or a Dick Cheney because Trump did not care. He had his agenda. And, Mitch McConnell could do whatever else he wanted in the Senate, provided he accommodated Trump and vice versa. So it was all a very toxic symbiosis. Okay. And now, as I say, they're finished using each other.
All right, Marion, let's go back to this thing there about what impeachment actually means. What does impeachment mean? Is the word conviction comes in here? I mean, if he's convicted in the Senate, does that preclude him from running again in 2024? Donald Trump?
Not necessarily. The way it will work is impeachment, in order to impeach a president, to start the process, you just need a simple majority vote in the House of Representatives. Now, they got that last week. I think it was 10 Republicans crossed the aisle to vote with the Democrats. So you had, I think it was 232 to 197 or thereabouts. Anyway, what it showed was that despite everything that happened, even though the Capitol was stormed, even though we saw the lies, the mendacity, the cynicism of the way Trump denied Biden's victory and all the other stuff that happened, Republicans decided they were sticking with him. The reason they probably decided they were sticking with him is, A, some of them genuinely are Trumpists to their bones, and B, they're looking at the elections in 2022 and they know if they didn't stick with them, they would be out of a job when the next elections come up in 2022. So anyway, it passed. What happens next is Nancy Pelosi then signs off on the articles and sends them to the Senate. Then a trial starts. You have a series of about 13 in total. They're called House managers who will present the trial in the Senate. Trump will appoint his own legal team. At the moment, it's looking like the two craziest men in law. It's still Rudy Giuliani and John Eastman.
Oh, right. It's not Dershowitz. He's not getting involved, is he? No.
Dershowitz has said that they haven't contacted him yet, and he seems a bit miffed about that. Now, that may all change on Monday. But what will happen then is there will be another trial, as there was a year ago. And this time, the big difference is Mitch McConnell has said he will allow a vote according to conscience in the Senate, that basically senators are free to vote for or against Trump's removal.
But what you said earlier on, Marion, is the fact that if this thing drags out the way it might because of the inauguration, and that Mitch McConnell can make it look as though that's getting in the way, that might mean that people, like in the exact same way as William Barr, actually, when you think about what happened with the Mueller report, not only did he wait 6 weeks to bring the damn thing out and people lost interest, he redacted the whole thing anyway. And he did a very good job in terms of making, look, that was nothing. And it was absolutely huge, the whole Russian thing. But the point
about,
but the point about this is, are you saying the same thing could happen here this time with McConnell stretching it out past the inauguration, blah, 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 people lose interest, forget about it?
Well, you see, what happens is McConnell's no longer in charge come January 19th.
No, but he sets it all in the next 4 days if he wants to.
Yes and no, because Nancy Pelosi has to send the articles to the Senate first. Now, Chuck Schumer will become the Senate Majority Leader. I have very little hope that Chuck Schumer, to me, is one of the most ineffectual, hand-wringing, verbose. He's the sort of politician that just makes you change the channel. I do not think he's an effective Senate leader at all. And I would be very amazed if he turns out to be effective. So it's going to fall onto his plate, basically, to do this. It probably would have in the main anyway, because it was never going to get done and dusted in a couple of days. And, you know, in the interest of justice, Dave, I think that you've got to behave honourably. You can't rush this. You've got to give Donald Trump time to prepare his defence as well. You know, it's just in the interest of justice and fair play and equal playing fields. You know, Democrats should not do what they constantly claim Republicans do, which is to railroad through things and to destroy justice and to trample over people's wishes and constitutional rights. So let's say that the trial takes a couple of weeks. If they do vote to remove him, it will take 17 Republicans. At the moment, I doubt they'll get 17, but they might if Republicans think that by voting to remove him, even though he will have left, that they can then move on to the next stage, which will be to vote to ensure he can never run again and to strip him of all his various presidential perks.
Well, do you think, regardless of what a lot of Republicans think, do you think a lot of Americans think that Trump must be held to the bar of history as well as to the bar of justice?
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, there could be a criminal prosecution. There's also another mechanism in the Constitution, without getting all wonky here. Article 14, Section 3 says that a elected official or a civil or military officer who incites violence or insurrection against the states is barred for running from office again. They could just have a simple Senate vote on that too, but people want their pound of flesh and they want it in different ways, and we will see what happens. But I think Donald Trump's legacy, you know, impeached twice, like drummed out of office after 4 years, lost the House and the Senate, presided over the most abject, cynical cruelties in I think, modern politics. And really, let's not forget that 400,000 people almost have died from coronavirus on his watch. Now, he's not directly responsible for the virus, but he is responsible for the colossal mismanagement, the politicisation and the ineptness with which he handled.
Marion, hold on a second. Marion, maybe he has a dreadful legacy. He got more votes than most presidents of the last 20 or 30 years. I mean, like, yeah. It's 74 million votes. Hello.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, yeah. Like, if he's been banned from his beloved Twitter and loads of other platforms, do you think that's a cynical move by the tech companies now that they know they're going to be Democrats in charge from next week? Or was it a necessary move in the public interest?
Oh, yeah. No. Since when have they ever acted in the public interest? I think it was utterly cynical. I think that the fact that Joe Biden is now president, they want to get on his good side, because there's a lot of calls for Google to be broken up, for Facebook to be broken up, for all these companies to be broken up and to be made smaller, or failing that, to have regulation that would be much, much stricter on them, because there isn't a level playing field at the moment. You can say things on social media you could never say on broadcast mediums like, you know, print newspapers or radio or TV. So there is a double standard there. I think they're very worried now that they could be subject to unwelcome regulation. They want to show Joe Biden, look, we can regulate ourselves, it's okay. But also, let's not forget, Donald Trump has also lived out his usefulness to them. The way people flocked to social media to follow Trump, you know, his 80, 90 million Twitter followers, whatever, the way they engaged with him, the way he could set the agenda from them, it was huge for Jack Dorsey. It made Twitter. Now Trump is no longer as relevant. So, you know, he can afford to do it now. This could have all been done 2 years ago. This could have been done after Charlottesville. You know, this could have been done after any number of disgraceful episodes that Donald Trump presided over, but they chose not to. So, you know,
you mentioned Jack Dorsey. That's another half hour. Where's his head at? Yep. It's stuck in his beard. He's gone so weird in the last few years. It's been incredible. Anyway, just one last one. Biden, like, he's been very conscientious about the pandemic all the way through his campaign. Is that going to continue for the inauguration? In other words, next Wednesday, limited numbers and all that?
Well, I know myself, just speaking for myself, Dave, I was on to the Senate director for accreditations earlier, and he just said, I don't know if I have mine yet. I've attended the last five or six inaugurations for two reasons, because of security and because of COVID. They're handing out a very, very limited number. But even the Capitol, the whole Capitol is ring fenced by these unscalable fences topped with razor wire. Honestly, to me, it's really sad to see Washington.
Yeah, I'm just wondering just how embarrassed Americans are with this.
You know, to see an inauguration take place under these circumstances, literally under siege with 20,000, like five times more troops than are in Afghanistan and Iraq at the moment, will be circling the capital, 20,000 troops, you know, keeping watch. And, you know, ironically, I think the places to watch out for on Inauguration Day are places like Richmond, Virginia, neighboring capitals, Michigan, as you mentioned earlier.
I'm back to Oregon
hope
as well.
That there won't be trouble. Oregon, all these places where you have very strong militia presence and where local police forces are intimidated by them and are in some cases sympathetic to them.
All right. Well, look, Marion, we got to go because we're coming up towards the news. So Marion McKeown from the Business Post. Thanks a million, Marion. I presume you'll be 24 hours a day awake for the next week. Good man. Or good person.
It's looking like it.
Thanks good a million. Person. See you, Marion.
Okay,
good luck.
Bye-bye.
Take it easy, bye.
Dave Fanning. Weekends on 2FM.